From looking at the schedule, it looks like the theme is Mayapur. Yes? Yes? That's what it says up there? On the other side. Okay, well. The schedule suggests or says that I'm going to speak something about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in Mayapur. So that's what we'll do. And then other things about Mayapur and Mayapur. Gaura Prema. Gaura Prema Nandi. From the feedback that I got from devotees that attended the Mayapur Yatra, one of the favorite places was one of the simplest places, the place of Kolavicha Shridhar. So I'll speak something about Kolavicha Shridhar. There's an entire chapter in Chaitanya Bhagavat from the Adikanda, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya before he became initiated, which means before he became a devotee. So he's performing a lila where he's not a devotee. That's quite a lila. But the chapter is Nimai wanders throughout Navadvipa. So when you think of Navadvipa during the time of Chaitanya Bhagavat, or the time of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, it's not the Navadvipa that's on the other side of the Ganga. You have to get from where we are, our Krishna, our temple, Radha Madhava Mandir, you get on a boat and go across the Ganga and downstream, and then you get to Navadvipa, and it's a big city. Or, I mean, it's a city. Not that Navadvipa, but where Lord Chaitanya lived at the house of Jagannath Mishra and Mother Sachi, that was Navadvipa. Or it was the Brahminical section of Navadvipa. And it's a little difficult in one sense to picture that, but in another sense it's not so difficult. Particularly if you visit a place that's well established, long, long, long established, is Sri Rangam. Anyone been here been to Sri Rangam? So Sri Rangam is in South India. It's the largest temple area of any temple in India, probably any temple in the world. It's huge. With so many gates, just like in Vaikuntha, so many gates, seven gates before you enter into Vaikuntha. There's so many, like, dwarams for huge entranceways. And then there's a city surrounding the temple. And where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed during the 4 months of the rainy season, where he stayed at the home of Venkata Bhatta, it's in an area, one of a number of areas actually, that every resident is part of the Brahminical community that takes responsibility for worshipping the deity of Ranganath or any of the other number of worship areas in Sri Rangam. So Prabhupada also then described in the development of the Mayapur city, he wanted, or he envisioned, areas where the Brahmanas would live, areas where the Kshatriyas would live, and areas where the Vaishyas would live, and so on. Not for you know, the wrong reasons, but for the right reasons, for the reasons that persons of similar nature like to be together. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born in a Brahmana family, and Jagannath Mishra was one of the most respected, or Purandara Mishra, the leading most exalted Vaishnava Brahmin in the whole community, and many of the others lived in the same vicinity, not like next door like it is in Sri Rangam, because Navadvip was not the same kind of a place. But when we visit in Mayapur, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or the house of Jagannath Mishra, is not far from Srivas Pandit's place, which is not far from Advaita Acharya and Gadadhar Pandit, and others in the Brahminical community lived in that same general area. And that in that chapter it describes his some pastimes of his scholastic challenging of different personalities, and kind of like a bully. He would go and engage people in debate and always defeat them. In that chapter it describes Srivas, who was like in age like his father, in the absence of his father, because Jagannath Mishra died when he was young, Srivas acted like his father, as this Chandrasekhar Prabhu, or Chandrasekhar Acharya. The two acted as their father. They were directly related. The wife of Chandrasekhar was Lord Chaitanya's aunt, and so he acted like the uncle in the place of his father. So Srivas, like the father, as a Vaishnav, wonderful Vaishnav, wanted to see his nephew become a wonderful devotee, and he was behaving like a wrangling little scholar. So he said, you know, if your interest in scholarship is simply a waste of time, if you had that same intensity and degree of interest in devotion to Krishna, you would be a great devotee. And Lord Chaitanya, or Nimai Pandit, smiled and said, I'll take that as a blessing that one day I may become like you wish me to become. And so with a swagger, he went here and there and taught his classes and came home and performed his midday duties, went back and taught the afternoon classes and took his bath in the Ganga. And then with a number of his students, they went through the shops throughout Navadvip, place to place, attending the shops. And the Leela is very much like the rasa, because the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, as we discussed in the morning from the Chaitanya Charitamrita reading, Ramananda Roy declared, you are Sri Krishna. Your complexion is actually blackish, not golden. That's who you are. That's who I know you to be. And Lord Chaitanya disclosed the truth. Yes, it's true. Here's my form of Radha Krishna. So, similar to the pastime of Krishna's entering into Mathura, you can recall that pastime, very nice pastime. The pretext of his going to Mathura was to respond to an invitation of Kamsa to come and take part in a festival. And the festival was called a bow festival. There was a grand, humongous bow that the competition was who could string the bow. So So without even anybody even getting there, a little 12-year-old Krishna went and picked up the bow and strung the bow and broke it. So before he got to Mathura, though, Krishna was wearing the garments of a cowherd. And he's about to enter into the big city, where people don't dress like cowherds, they dress like city people dress. So, with Akura's chariot reaching Mathura, the outskirts of Mathura early, he went from place, he went in to explore place by place. You know, the, what's the scene of Mathura look like? Like, you know, like a little child, a little young boy might go exploring here and there. And the pastime, if you read it in a certain way, it's very similar to deity worship. Krishna is showing his form, and he then took the garments of the king from the washerman, and then he went to a weaver who provided him with decorations to hang on his body, and then he met Kubja, who gave sandalwood paste and camphor and scented oils, and then to the florist, who gave him a beautiful garland. It's like deity worship. Of course, amongst them all, the florist seemed to have been the most fortunate, because he was prepared even before Krishna got there. He had saved the best flowers, and he made the best of garlands for Krishna and Balaram. He knew that they were coming, and he was just waiting for the opportunity to make the best offering. Like, you know, pujaris might think of the best flowers to offer to the deities on some festival day. And they're planning way ahead of time, long ahead of time, the best of the best of a new set of clothes and a new ornaments and fresh garland. And so, like that, Krishna didn't come as a deity form. Krishna came in his personal form and provided the opportunity for different persons to worship him and render deity worship or puja and serve him in that way. Kubja, of course, was very, very fortunate. And all of these articles, by the way, this is in the capital city. This is the property of the king. As much as the clothes that Krishna wanted from the washerman were the king's clothes. Kubja similarly was engaged in providing the finest of camphor and sandalwood and scented oils for the king. But she didn't mind, you know, this is for the king. She became so attracted to Krishna immediately. Boom, boom, boom. Just like when they anoint the deity form of the Lord. Not in the same lila, but in the same rasa, Krishna went from shop to shop in Navadvip. And rather than a small boy who was the son of Nanda Maharaj and the prince of Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the son of Jagannath Mishra and a young brahmana who was seeking, like, you know, going from shop to shop, when you go from shop to shop, and as is the custom, different than in America, the custom is bargaining for the price. Those of you from India, you know what all that's about. And it's just part of the rasa of dealing with a Vaishya. You bargain for the price. They say, and you say, and they say, and you say, and then you arrive at a price. How it works. If you don't know about bargaining, you just pay them whatever they ask for, and they think, oh, this guy's a real sucker. Because the deal is you bargain for the price. So he's a brahmana going from shop to shop asking for their wares. May I see some of your ornaments? May I see smell some of the fragrances, the scented oils? May I, he went to the place with some homes where there were some cowherds, and wanting to examine the quality of their dairy products, and they treated him just like another cowherd boy, amongst the cowherd community of Brahmana, and please come to my home, and my father will be very happy that he'll just honor you and give you whatever you like, as much as you like. Please come to my home, please come to my home. Giving them opportunity to serve. And one of the most, the longest sections of that visiting place to place is he visited an astrologer. And when he visited the astrologer, he asked the astrologer, I've heard you're an excellent astrologer. Oh, yes, yes. What would you like to know? I'd like to know who I was in my previous life. So the system, aside from casting astrological charts and those kinds of things, was tuning into super soul, because to do something that's so refined as astrology is, there's a science to it, but there's also a devotional art to it, and one is a really qualified astrologer who has a super soul channel connection. And Supersoul can guide them, give them finer and finer and finer material intelligence, how to understand things that ordinary people can't understand, because their refined intelligence is tuned into the Supersoul channel. I describe it that way. So the astrologer said, I would like some time to chant my Gopal mantra. And he chanted his Gopal mantra. And started in his vision, he was seeing the various forms of the Leela avatars, the forms of Matsya and Kurma and Varaha and Lord Vishnu and Vamana, and seeing them and in amazement. He opened his eyes and he saw Lord Chaitanya standing before him and waiting patiently, and he went further and saw Radha and Krishna. And because the question was, who was I in my previous life? It's a long, long description, lots of detail of what he envisioned. So when he finished his meditation and saw Lord Chaitanya still sitting there just smiling, saying, my dear astrologer, what did you see? Please tell me. And he said, I think I have to do some more mantra chanting. Can you come back again tomorrow? In this way, Lord Chaitanya, as a practice, would from time to time, in the guise, so he, when it came to the bartering stage, Lord Chaitanya would directly say, I'm a Brahmana, I don't have any money. And they would say, very well, you can take the item today and you can come back sometime later, and whatever it is that you'd like to give, you can give. I mean, shopkeepers don't say that, by the way. But you're a Brahmana, and one should give in charity to a Brahmana. So if you like, you can give something, and whatever it is you'd like to give, you can give that. But just with the cowherds, it was just, you just take as much as you like, come back again and again. So in that mood, he practically every day, he didn't go to other shops, he went every day to see Kulavich or Shuddhar. And the occupation he was also a Vaishya. That the item that he sold was banana leaves, banana flowers, ripe bananas, green bananas, and banana cups, and banana leaf plates, meaning you take the leaf and you somehow break it into pieces, and with the little sticks you would put the leaf together and make a leaf cup or make a leaf plate. And those of you that have been to Mayapur, there are banana trees all over the place. So all that you're doing by going to such a vendor is not climbing the tree. And so how much could he sell such products for? Because they just were available in the tree. But something. And he would, by the side of the Ganges River, have his wares spread on a cloth, as they would do, because he didn't have a shop. And then people would come by and they'd engage in some discussion, how much are those, and have some bartering for the price. And Lord Chaitanya was in the role of a brahmana speaking to a vaishya, and a vaishya naturally wants to, and by duty, as much as they can, gives in charity to a brahmana. So Lord Chaitanya would demand charity. Like, you know, in a spirited way. But it was with great love that he would engage in this. It wasn't getting something for nothing. He would act like a greedy brahmana. He would speak like a greedy, tricky brahmana. And Kalaveshwar Sridhar wasn't a tricky Vaishnava. He was a pure Vaishnava. And he didn't behave like a Vaishya. He behaved like a pure Vaishnava with a tricky brahmana. But it was just pastime. Because actually Kalaveshwar loved Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya loved Kalaveshwar. And so he behaved like this. And spent, it's described in this section of Chaitanya Bhagavat, couple hours every day engaging in dialogue with him over the price of his bananas and so many other things. So I'd like to just read the section. There's long purports given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but it's difficult to, or it's inadequate just to summarize the statements that they make back and forth. The location of Kalaveshwar Sridhar's home was, there's a grove of banana trees, and still it's a smaller grove, but by the Jagannath Mandir, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls Sharadanga. So about a mile away from Chankazi Samadhi, and up on a little rise, not like Govardhan Hill, but a little hill, little elevation of land, meaning it doesn't get flooded so easily during the rainy season. And there's a small pond nearby. So after all these nice exchanges in Navadvip town, Lord Chaitanya would go visit Kalaveshwar Sridhar. So this is Vrindavan Das Thakur writing. Sridhar was very dear to the Lord's heart, and the Lord would therefore visit him on various pretexts. The Lord would tease Sridhar in the course of their regular conversations, which would last for an hour or two. When Sridhar saw Nimai had arrived, he offered him obeisances and a place to sit. Sridhar was always peaceful in his behavior, while the Lord enjoyed playing the role of an agitated young man. The Lord said, "Sridhar, you always chant the name of Hari. So why are you always afflicted by poverty? Can you please tell me why? After serving the beloved Lord of Lakshmi, you do not get sufficient food and clothes? Why are you so poor? You worship the husband of the goddess of fortune. Shridhar replied, at least I'm not starving. And whether small or large, I'm still wearing some cloth. The Lord said, but I see your cloth is mended in 10 places. And the roof over your cottage has no straw. Look at other people. They worship Chandi or Vishahari. So they have no scarcity for food or cloth. Shridhar then replied, O Brahmana, what you say is indeed correct. Yet, the time passes equally for everyone. The king has jewels in his house, and he eats opulent food. Meanwhile, the birds live in the tree. Yet, time passes equally for everyone. As they all enjoy the fruits of their previous activities by the will of the Supreme Lord. The Lord then said, you have great wealth that you are secretly enjoying. I shall soon disclose this to everyone. Then how will you cheat us? Because what's the austerity of Kolavichar Sridhar? On one level, there is this saying, austerity is the wealth of the Brahmana. So austerity sounds like pain, like austere. But for a Brahmana engaging in austerity, it's control of the mind and control of the senses. Like we might say for ourselves, on Ekadasis, for example, observing some vrata, we observe, or on during the month of Kartik, some vrata, something that's a little austerity, you eat something less, or you chant something more, or you say certain prayers, like, that's austerity. But for a Brahmana, it's happiness. Brahmanas love austerities as much as Kshatriyas love combat and fighting and chivalry. Give them a chance for something chivalrous. Wow, they're happy. A nice fight. Boy, they like it. And to some other persons, it's, oh, look at that. That's awful. But for a Kshatriya, it's enlivening. And for a Vaishya, some opportunity to make some money, and they're in there, and they're enthusiastic, and they're happy, and that's the spirit of a Vaishya. So this, similarly, the spirit of a Brahmana is austerities they like. And to other people, it seems unbearable, very difficult. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also a Brahmana. He knows from a Brahmana position, the austerities are nice. But he's speaking in a contradictory way. You're so poor. You could just worship in a different way and you'd be rich. You're a Vaishya, think about it. Instead of poor, you're rich. And Kolavichar is taking the position that whatever one has, it comes by time, it is taken by time, and so why worry about it? I'm not going to absorb myself in that. The king has his jewels and the bird lives in a tree and time passes the same for everyone. Time brings, time takes away. My attention is elsewhere. So I know you have a great treasure. His treasure, but it's not just his austerities, but his love. Gora Prema. He has love for Lord Chaitanya. But he doesn't say what that treasure is. I know you have a treasure. And you're just making like you don't have a big treasure. I'm going to disclose the truth and expose you. Here's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's paraphrasing of this exchange. You are already very rich, so there's no need for you to accumulate external mundane wealth. Therefore, you do not consider external worldly scarcity is poverty. One who is engaged in the service of the fully omnipotent Lord cannot have any weakness or scarcity at all. After a few days, I will reveal to human society that is ignorant of the position and glories of the Vaishnavas, that the Vaishnavas are the sole proprietors of all wealth. It will no longer remain secret that the Vaishnavas are situated on the topmost platform and are the proprietors of everything, including all opulences. I will soon disclose this to all the foolish, ignorant people of the world. Because remember, in his Leela, Lord Chaitanya is still a wrangling scholar. He hasn't become a devotee yet. So he's not disclosing the glories of devotion, and those who have devotion have the greatest of all opulences. There's not a Mayapur pastime, but there's a very wonderful revealing and sweet exchange during the time of Hara Panchami in Puri, where there's a pastime, an annual event, where the soldiers of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, go to Gambhira and demand that their lord returns, and they have literally a fight with the residents of Gambhira, the protectors of Lord Jagannath, and with sticks. You know, that the procession is with great opulence because they're the servants of the goddess of fortune. They go in grand opulence and splendor and demand that Jagannath returns to the temple. And they say harsh things. You better or else. Name calling, and there's a whole leela that's enacted. And when seeing that leela, Shivas Thakur says, just see. Somebody got their car parked in the wrong place? One of those. Okay. A red Honda CRV is blocking someone who needs to leave. Anybody here have a red Honda CRV? Yes? Okay. Okay. So, Shivas Thakur says, just see the opulence of my goddess of fortune, and describes the opulence of Dwarka and the opulence of Lakshmi in Dwarka, and just see my opulence. So then the question is raised, what do you think of this? Is Krishna's position in Vrindavan, because Gambhira represents Krishna in Vrindavan, is the opulence of Krishna in Vrindavan less or greater than the opulence of Dwarka? And one of the devotees speaks on and on and on and on and on about the opulence of Krishna in Vrindavan. His opulence far surpasses the opulence of Dwarka. He exhibits the opulence of Dwarka and much more than the opulence of Dwarka in his Vrindavan Leela. And everyone laughs, because they're different moods of love. Like one of the questions I was asked just recently about the different moods, someone emphasizes this, someone emphasizes that. Anubhava was asking this question. Some people have this, some people have that point of view. So, amongst Vaishnavas, there are different points of view, and that's very nice. It's okay to have different moods of appreciation. Now this is, we're speaking of transcendental, real, genuine transcendental appreciation of the glories of Krishna exhibited this way and the glories of Krishna exhibited that way. Sridhar is exhibiting a different kind of opulence. His opulence is his opulence of love. And with that opulence of love, he's not in the slightest attracted to the other kind of opulence. So others might view Sridhar's position as, oh, he's so poor. And sometimes, I suppose, sometimes people think, I better not become a Vaishnav. Prabhupada writes about it at least. Some people think, can we close that door? Better not become a Vaishnav, because then I'll be poor. Better I worship this other way, and then I'll be rich, I'll have opulences. But from the point of view of Vaishnavism, the real opulence is the opulence of love. And whether, like Kolavich or Sridhar, one apparently has next to nothing, or like Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who had opulence that was surpassing the opulence of heaven. In either case, the poverty, apparent poverty of Kolavich or Sridhar, the apparent opulence of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, neither have an interest in the material opulence, not having, wishing they had, or having and being the enjoyer of that which they have. The position of a Vaishnava, the opulence of a Vaishnava is detachment from those things because of another kind of wealth, the wealth of devotion, and the happiness and contentment that comes from devotion, such that one can have or not have a externally opulent situation or facilities, and be happy without the facilities, and be not distracted by having the facilities of paraphernalia or comforts or things like that. I'll just narrate very quickly a little exchange with Srila Prabhupada. Some of you, I'm sure, have heard this before. But it was, Prabhupada was teaching the same lesson as is being taught here, only in a different way, but same lesson. So one morning in Vrindavan, morning walk, going out the front gate of Krishna Balaram Mandir and making a right-hand turn and going down that road, Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, now it's called then, I don't know what the name was, but it wasn't all those shops and buildings and it was construction, it was just fields, like empty, any direction you could look, just fields. Because when the Krishna Balaram Mandir was, the property was donated or purchased for a very modest amount, whichever it was, the devotees were wondering, and Prabhupada commented on later, it was so far from Vrindavan. Like, you know, it's some distance from where all the everything was developed. And Prabhupada said, don't worry, in time this will be well developed. It'll be more developed than Vrindavan. And people were wondering, what's he talking about? But sure enough, that's the situation today. So we went out the front gate, made a right, and fields on both sides. And down about a mile, it's not there anymore, but for years it was there. There was a grove of trees, like a thick grove of trees and a little pathway in and around the grove of trees. So Prabhupada liked that grove of trees, and we walked directly into the grove of trees, and we were following behind Prabhupada. And he was speaking about, he entered into a certain mood, a mood of how nice it is to live in Vrindavan, where one can live very, very simply, and see to the necessities of life just provided for in a natural way. There's some roots, there's some herbs, there's some leaves. He walked over to one tree and it had these pods that had little, like, looked like pea pod. And he asked somebody, are these edible? And pulled on it and said, living in Vrindavan is so nice, living very simply. We walked a little bit of a distance, and there was like the grove of trees ended, and there was like a cliff, a sharp drop-off, and down below was agricultural land, and he pointed over and said, see that little house, that cottage over there? That's where a householder couple live. You see over there, that's where their cow is. So if one sadhu goes there in the morning and has his lota and says, may I have some milk? They'll give some milk. surely, just in, this is the way of Brijbasi life. And maybe some atar and some roti, and then a little of this and a little of that, and his economic problem is solved for the day, and the rest of his day is engaged in hearing and chanting and devotional service to Krishna. Life in Vrindavan is so nice. It's just in that mood. I remember Yasoda Nandana Swami then stepped on a thorn because he didn't have his shoes on. And he was hopping around on one foot, you know, trying to pull the thorn out, keeping up with Prabhupada, hopping on one foot. And Prabhupada stopped and said, "What are you doing?" "I got a thorn in my foot, Prabhupada." He said, "Why did you bring your shoes?" He said, "Well, I wanted to catch the morning walk, and I couldn't find my shoes, so I just came anyway." And Prabhupada scolded him and said, "You should wear your shoes. Don't come on these morning walks without wearing your shoes. Just see what happens. Now you get that properly treated when you get back, because it could become infected," and gave him like a lesson. And then went back into the how nice it is to be in Vrindavan. Ooh. And then I was standing right next to Prabhupada, and he turned to Brahmananda and said, like a U-turn, like, and then said, "Did you receive the $50,000 for the printing of the next publication? And did you check the color separations? And did you sure that you've got it, examined it very, very carefully like I trained you? Very good." And then he went right back to how nice it is to live in Vrindavan. And I accepted that he was doing that deliberately. Whether or not it was deliberate, I took it that way. That whether one is in this situation, I'm very happy. You're in that situation, I'm very happy. Because the essence of happiness is being in Krishna's service. And if Krishna's service means having next to nothing and being very happy with having next to nothing, so that necessities are simply provided and you live with whatever is simply provided, and as Kolavichar Shridhar is saying in a simple way, time passes equally for everyone. Whatever that by my past deeds I'm due to receive, I'll receive it. I'm not going to be in big anxiety about what I receive, don't receive. It's here and then it's gone. So I accept that. Or the other happiness. Here we are in a situation where there's a nice deity worship in an opulent temple, and you know, and so on. We have nice prasadam and the heat's on, and even it's really cold outside, and let's have a nice situation. So the happiness is not, now I have a nice situation. Because one could have a nice situation and be in complete anxiety and be in maya. And that's not happiness. The happiness is the contentment of bhakti. So Lord Chaitanya recognized that Kolavichar had that great wealth. You have great wealth that you are secretly enjoying. I will soon disclose this to everyone. Then how will you cheat us? Calling the Vaishya a cheater. You've got great, but it's just friendly speaking. Looks like something else. Sridhar said, "Oh, Pandit, please go home. It's not proper for us to argue." The Lord said, "I'm not going to leave you so easily. First tell me what you'll give me." The bargaining program. Sridhar said, "I maintain myself by selling leaf cups, so tell me, what can I give you, Gosai?" The Lord said, "Let your hidden treasure remain for now. I'll take that later. For now, give me some bananas, banana flowers, and banana stalks, free of charge. Then I won't argue with you anymore." Sridhar thought, "This Brahmin is very aggressive. I'm afraid that one day he will beat me. But even if he beats me, what can I do? He's a Brahmana. At the same time, I can't supply him free of charge every day. Anyway, whatever this Brahmana takes by force or by deceit, that is my good fortune. So I'll continue to give him every day." Thinking in this way, Sridhar said, "Listen, Gosai, don't worry about money. I'll happily give you some bananas, banana flowers, leaf cups, banana stalks, but please, don't fight with me. Lord said, good, then I won't fight anymore. But see that I get good quality bananas and banana stalks. The Lord daily used Sridhar's leaf cups, ate sabjis made from Sridhar's plantains, banana flowers, and banana stalks. Whenever a squash grew on the roof of Sridhar's cottage, the Lord would eat it cooked with milk and black pepper. The Lord said, tell me, what do you think of me? After you answer, I'll go home. Sridhar replied, you are a Brahmana, a portion of Lord Vishnu. The Lord then said, you don't know. Actually, I am from a Gopa family. Although you see me as the son of a Brahmana, I consider myself to be a cowherd boy. Sridhar smiled at the Lord's words, but due to the illusory energy, he could not recognize his Lord. The Lord then said, Sridhar, let me tell you the truth. The glories of your Ganges are due to me. Sridhar replied, Nimai, Pandit, aren't you afraid of insulting the Ganga in this way? One is supposed to become sober as he grows up. And I see your restlessness has doubled. After joking with Sridhar in this way, Lord Garanga returned to his home. The three other very nice pastimes are described. One of them is not so well known, but very nice. On the very day that Lord Chaitanya first performed public congregational chanting. At the end of that day, he went and spent the night at Kolavichar Sridhar's home. The pastime, as you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed Sankirtan regularly at the house of Srivas Thakur. And then there was challenge from the Brahmanas of Navadvip to have them stop. And they even went so far as to spread rumors, and they went so far as to went to the Chankazi's home and lodged a complaint against their loud chanting of the holy name, saying, they're destroying our religious principles. It's the duty of the representative of the king to stop this defilement of our religious practice. Nowhere in our religious practice do you find what these people are doing. They're destroying our religion. You have to protect our religion. Stop them. So the Qazi sent his constables to stop them. And one time the Qazi went himself right to the house of Kolavich, or to the house of Srivas Pandit, and with his own stick he broke the drum and commanded them, you stop. And if you don't stop, then I'll convert you all into Muslims. I'll sprinkle water on your head from my water pot and you'll all become Muslims. So stop. And when that news came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the next day he called for civil disobedience, even before Martin Luther King started civil disobedience measures. Lord Chaitanya did the civil disobedience measure of, he gathered all the devotees, 10,000, that's a lot, 10,000, and they were angry Bengalis. We have some Bengalis here, so they know what that means. To the house of Kolavichar, to the house of Chankazi. First they went to all the marketplaces throughout Navadvip, because there wasn't just one, there were many marketplaces. And each of the marketplaces, 10,000 devotees having huge kirtan. That must have been quite a scene. And no, the constables didn't stop them. And then as it became night, because Lord Chaitanya had told them, get torches, like, you know, some cloth stuck in kerosene and on the end of a stick, and we'll go right to all day long to the night at the house of Chankazi. So that Chankazi hid himself when, you know, 10,000 angry Bengalis, anything could happen. He hid under his bed. And there they are downstairs with the crowd saying, you know, get the Kazi, kill the Kazi, let him have it, finish him. Kazi didn't come out. Then Lord Chaitanya sent someone to see him and invite him to come down, saying, promising, you know, there won't be any harm that will come to you. And their dialogue, why are you not receiving me hospitably? I'm a resident of your village and you're in charge and we've just come here to have some discussion with you. Well, your people are very unhappy and so I didn't come. After their discussion, Chankazi said, the reason I, all day long, Lord Chaitanya asked, why didn't you stop us? You came and broke the mridanga, your constables were stopping us every other time. Why didn't you come today? We went to all the marketplaces. And he said, well, I'll tell you later. Or, come on inside and I'll tell you privately. No, no, you can say whatever you have to say. These are all friends. He said, last night, while I was asleep, this huge, fierce figure, half lion, half man, jumped on my chest, roaring loudly. And he started ripping open my chest with his nails. And he showed the, opened his shirt and showed the marks on his chest, where the nails of Nrisingadev was ripping his chest apart. He said, I'll forgive you this one time, but never let it happen again, or you're finished. The chanting should go on. So I didn't stop you. And I say, from this day forward, in my kingdom, and any generations that follow me, who are continue in my line to be Kazi, the chanting of the holy name should not be stopped by any of our representatives. It may go on freely. So from that day forward, the public sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed. But by that time it was the end of the day, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been chanting and dancing all day long. And so he was tired and thirsty. So from the place of Chankazi's house, he went the extra distance, like a mile, and went straight to Kolavichar Sridhar's little cottage. A little cottage that didn't even have a straw roof on it, because he was so poor. And he went there to rest at the end of a long, weary day of this glorious activity for which Lord Chaitanya advented, to bring the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord into the world. That very evening he went to Kolavichar Sridhar's home to take rest. So as he was preparing to rest, Kolavichar Sridhar felt, he's a Vaishnava and he wanted to honor his guests, and he's so poor, he doesn't have anything to offer. You know, they've been fasting and I don't have anything to give them. He felt very bad from a Vaishnava perspective. Happy to honor all the Vaishnavas, but very bad, I don't have anything to give them. So Lord Chaitanya said, well, at least you can give some water. He said, I don't even have water. So he saw by the entrance of his house, little cottage, an old iron pot, patched, discarded. So he patched up that old iron pot. Immediately Lord Chaitanya drank from the pot the water that was in this useless item. And Kolavichar Sridhar was clasping his head, saying, oh, now you've destroyed me. Why have you destroyed me? Because this isn't fit for you. And Lord Chaitanya was saying, my happiness is accepting your remnants of water. Because that's all he had. And took rest for the evening at the house of Kulavichar Sridhar. So to get to the house of Kulavichar Sridhar, for the last four or five times that I've been to Mayapur, it comes at the end of the first day of the Parikrama. By the end of the first day, it's starting to get late. Like, you know, the sun is starting to go down. Because Bengal is on the eastern side of India, so the sun rises early and the sun sets early. So the sun was setting, but some devotees wanted to go. So our guide took them. And they said it was the best. And what is it? It's just you walk through a little pathway through these fields and there's this little shrine. But the mood, the spiritual vibration of the place was so moving. That's what everyone that went. Many of the persons who went reported. It just was so moving just to be in that place. Of course, meditating on the mood of Kulavichar Sridhar and his complete love for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's complete love for him. Although they would sometimes speak in these ways that didn't look like love, look like bullying or teasing, or as he said, this Brahmin is so aggressive. But Advaitacharya and Lord Nityananda, they would sometimes speak with one another in a similar way of seemingly saying bad things directly to one another. But actually, it was a glorification of one another, only enigmatic, difficult to understand. But they understood, and they enjoyed their pastimes together. Later, in the Mahaprakash Leela, that is, in the house of Srivas Thakur, where Lord Chaitanya was displaying all night long, he was displaying his divinity. Instead of the mood of a devotee of the Lord, he was exhibiting his position as the Lord of all. And many, practically all of the devotees, one by one came forward, and Lord Chaitanya revealed some indescribable, distant truth, some things, some events that happened before Lord Chaitanya was even born. Like, for one of them is he requested his teacher, Gangadas Pandit, to come forward. And Lord Chaitanya said, Gangadas, do you remember before my birth there was an invasion of Muslim soldiers and you were afraid for the safety of your wife and your daughters, that if the soldiers got their hands on them, they would be polluted. And so just for their protection, you're trying to get to the other side of the Ganga, and you went in the dead of the night so no one would see you. And you went to the ghat where there were normally boats, but there was no boats. And then suddenly a boat appeared and took you to the other side. Gangadas, do you remember that? And you were so thankful to the boatman. I was that boatman. I personally came and took you to the other side. Gangadas just burst out in tears and fell to the ground crying, understanding the merciful nature of Lord Chaitanya and his love for his devotees, his wish to protect his devotees in all circumstances, even the ordinary circumstances of life, what to speak of spiritually protecting them. And on, one after the next, the devotees came forward and he asked for Sridhar to come. But Sridhar, the place of Kulavichar Sridhar, is so far away. Just to walk from the house of Srivas Thakur to the house of Kulavichar Sridhar probably takes an hour, maybe more. And it was the dead of night. And they didn't have street lights. They didn't have flashlights. They didn't have the things that we have. So how are we going to find him? How are we going to find his place? Lord Chaitanya said, just listen. You'll hear a calling in the dead of night of the holy names of the Lord in a supplicating mood. That's Sridhar, chanting the holy names of the Lord all night long. Just follow the sound of his voice, you'll find him. And sure enough, they found him. And they told him, Lord Chaitanya wants you to come, please come at once. And he was saying, no, no, I can't go there. They practically forcibly brought him before Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya demanded, Sridhar, you are so dear to me, please accept a benediction. And Sridhar said, I have everything. I don't want anything. Please don't ask me. I'm not a mercantile personality. My job is I sell things, but I give you things. I don't want anything. He said, I'll give you opulence. I'll give you a kingdom. I'll give you a great treasury. I'll give you the position of a king. Tell me what you'd like. And he just started crying and saying, Lord Chaitanya, I don't want anything. It's just here's one thing. Let me be forever in your service. And if it gives you pleasure to come and tease me and harass me and bargain for the price of my wares, life after life, let me be in that position because it gives you pleasure. I just want to be in the situation of association of you and your devotees, lifetime after lifetime. And Lord Chaitanya was, just see the simple and pure heart of Kulavachar Sridhar. He is so dear to me because of that purity and simplicity. So this is Kulavachar Sridhar. Then on the other end of the spectrum of opulence is Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Just very quickly, because there's a whole chapter about Pundarik Vidyanidhi that it immediately follows this description of Kulavachar Sridhar. The chapter is the wandering of Nimai Pandit throughout Navadvip. But the very next chapter is Gadadhar Pandit meets Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And Mukunda was hailed from the same village. I'm pointing up this way on the map. Here's Navadvip. Somewhere up here is the place where Mukunda had come from, and from the same place was where Pundarik Vidyanidhi had come from. Mukunda came here much earlier, before Pundarik Vidyanidhi did. But he knew him from his childhood. So when Pundarik Vidyanidhi came, Mukunda knew him to be a great devotee, an incredible Vaishnava. So when he moved to the Navadvip area, Mukunda went to his friend, Gadadhar Pandit, and said, I want to introduce you to a great devotee whose love for Krishna is unparalleled in this world. So Gadadhar Pandit was a great devotee himself, and he was very happy to hear about the arrival in Navadvip of this wonderful Vaishnava. But the nature of Gadadhar Pandit is, like Kulavachar Sridhar, his wealth was in devotion. And he was naturally inclined to renunciation. He was a brahmana. Kulavachar Sridhar was a Vaishya by his occupation. And Gadadhar Pandit was a brahmana by his occupation. And he was not at all interested in worldly things. He was very interested in devotional things from childhood. So here's this young fellow, young in age, Gadadhar Pandit getting an invitation from Mukunda to go and see Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He didn't know who he was. And when he came into the presence of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, what he saw was, it looked to him like sense gratification to the max. He was surrounded by opulence. Big white silk pillows and reclining and fans and vessels filled with special drinks and someone fanning him and, you know, something out of the movies. It's like opulence and enjoying opulence. And in his mind, Gadadhar Pandit was thinking, yuck. Why did he bring me here to see this? Mukunda understood his mind because they were very dear friends. So Mukunda began singing because he was a very good singer. He sang a Bhagavatam verse glorifying Krishna. And singing that Bhagavatam verse glorifying Krishna, Pundarik Vidyanidha hearing that verse glorifying Krishna, it brought a transformation in his heart. It touched his heart so much so that he began experiencing symptoms of ecstasy. And as he experienced symptoms of ecstasy, he lost control of his body and senses and fell from his nice comfy little seat and fell on the floor and started rolling around on the floor. And Mukunda kept singing the verse again and again. And he was, Pundarik Vidyanidhi was exhibiting ecstasies, his body erupting in ecstatic love for Krishna. And again, clasping his head, Gadadhar Pandit thought, oh, I've made a big offense. I was thinking that this person is just a mundane materialistic individual. I was judging by the externals and not seeing the internal quality of the person. But now I can understand the internal quality of the person. So after Mukunda stopped his singing, after some time Pundarik Vidyanidhi got his composure together, and Gadadhar Pandit explained to him the offense, mental offense that he had made against Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and requested his forgiveness, and as a gesture of his sincere, humble submission to Pundarik Vidyanidhi, requested Pundarik to give him initiation. And Pundarik agreed, and after some time, on an auspicious day, Gadadhar Pandit became the disciple of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So here's this super contrast. Gadadhar Pandit, a totally renounced Vaishnava Brahmin, and an apparently sense-gratifying personality, but not at all, that externally, apparently, but internally, totally, totally absorbed in love for Krishna. Something very similar to what another associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited, just by seeing the peacock fan of the king, the physician. His name? Mukunda. Murari. Yeah. Seeing the, it's not Murari Gupta, it's the, in Narahari, Raghunandan, and Mukunda. Mukunda Sarkar. Yes?
Sarkar.
Not Sarkar.
Sarkar.
Huh? No. Anyway, someone else, a physician, whose name I can't remember, seeing the peacock fan of the king, thought of Krishna and became stunned in ecstasy. Devotees of Lord Chaitanya were on such a platform that which reminded them of Krishna would take them completely from external consciousness, where the platform where they were performing their duties, to total absorption, to a degree of absorption that they lost external consciousness in thought of Krishna. That was the capacity of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Sometimes he's called Premanidhi, the ocean of prema. And he became the initiating spiritual master, Gadadhar Pandit. How elevated is that? So the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were extraordinary personalities in their the extent of their devotion to Krishna and the extent of their deep devotion to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is not different than Krishna. And with that absorption, detachment, yukta vairagya, fully engaged in service of the personality of Godhead, fully detached from the position of have or have not, with or without, in this feature of duality, that feature of duality, remaining completely contented, happy, and undisturbed because of fullness and absorption of devotion to the personality of Godhead. That's the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the associates of Mahaprabhu exhibited those teachings very, very beautifully. So I'll end with that and see if there's some thoughts or discussion. Okay, so we'll end.